The numbers told the story. They always do.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubos, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. See what I almost did there, Jeff? Do you see what happened? It's Gil Alexander. Jeff Parlay is here. Jeff's made it through an hour, everybody. Let's give him a round of applause.
Where am I?
You good?
I don't know where I am, Gil. No, I'm kidding. We're doing all right.
Still to come this hour, Brady Cannon on golf. By the way, FedEx Cup starts next week. Does that interest you at all? I love that. I love betting anything that has two dimensions to it. Brady's not as into it, but we'll talk about
doesn't
it.
Doesn't that get progressively more interesting as the field shrinks, though, Gil?
Yes, I love it.
Yeah.
But like, you know, these golf handicappers, they have their way of doing things, and so when the field gets shrunk, it's different for them. I mean,
the first one is just a regular golf tournament. After the first one, I'm kind of with you.
Correct. Yeah. Yes, that's why our one and done at primetime action stops after the first one. I'm in last.
I was going to say, are you in big trouble as you were before the stone for me?
Kelly Bidlin has just come out of nowhere in the last couple weeks. See if I have a trick up my sleeve here in the last couple weeks. By the way, we're also going to talk to Jason Weingarten here momentarily from under a cloud of smoke in Southern Cali. Talk trade deadline, his baseball thoughts of the day. Did you ever discover, by the way, that you have a useless talent at any point in your life?
This doesn't count as that?
Oh, this is... Well, hopefully this is useful. I discovered over vacation, I can name... Are you ready for this? I can't do this for football. I can't do it for college football. I can't do it for basketball. Although I really haven't tried with basketball. I certainly can't do it with college basketball. I can name every World Series champion of my lifetime. Can you do that? I don't know why of all sports can I do that with baseball. Is it because baseball neatly fits into a calendar year and all the others are like 94, 95, 96, 97, that kind of thing?
There was a point I definitely could have done that pretty easily. I still could probably do it, right?
I don't know why. Like, you give me a year, I'm like, yep, I associate it immediately. It's very strange. But that's the kind of impact baseball has on some of our lives. And I wouldn't even consider it to be my favorite sport, but baseball is part of Americana in a strange way. And yesterday, Vin Scully, last night, the famous Dodgers announcer beyond, but most known for his years as the sole voice of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Vin Scully passed away at the age of 94. 67 of those years, with the Dodgers organization, Brooklyn and Los Angeles. That is just unbelievable. From 1950, from 1950 to 2016, part of the Dodgers organization. Could you imagine, Jeff, do you think if you live to be 94, do you think you'll spend 67 of them with VSiN? Do you think that's a possibility?
No. No offense to anyone, it's not going to happen. No. I can't imagine spending 67 years with, period, in anything.
I can't imagine spending 67 minutes with anything. It's incredible.
What a career, what a human being, and just so many big moments Vin was associated with. But even more than the big moments, Gil, how about just the random stories he would tell throughout every single broadcast that would just keep you on the edge of your seat?
Well, that was the beauty of him. And let's talk about the moments first, because those are going to get the headlines, right? And we'll do it sort of in crescendo order. Joe Carter's home run to win the World Series for the Blue Jays in 94, where he just went silent. Joe Carter's three-run shot to beat the Phillies off Mitch Williams, where he said home run, and he went silent for over 30 seconds. And I want to say that was the story that Vern Lundquist told, where Vin Scully actually turned his back to the action. He certainly, that was part of his hallmark, where he would just go silent. He would let the moment marinate. He would let the moment soak in. It was never about him. There was that, obviously, 1986, the year the Mets won it, Game 6, famously. He called the little roller up along first, behind the bag. It gets through Buckner. Here comes night, and the Mets win it. He was there. Dwight Clark, he did football for many years. He did football on CBS. He did it with Hank Stram, I believe. And he called the 49ers' famous 1981 NFC Championship win over the Cowboys that sent them to their first Super Bowl against the Bengals in Pontiac, Michigan, and their first Super Bowl win. But the catch, as it became known, he ended up that call by saying, Dwight Clark is 6'4". He stands about 10 feet tall in this crowd's estimation. He always had the right words for the moment. When Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's hallowed mark of career home runs of 714, a iconic baseball number that had existed for decades, Scully said, "What a marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol." You just let those words sit and you get chills. And of course, probably the most famous, 1988, Game 1, World Series, Oakland Athletics, Dodgers at Chavez Ravine. Kirk Gibson, Yard, Offek, Dennis Eckersley. In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened. Didn't have it planned like some of these modern day announcers who clearly have preconceived what they're going to say if a certain event occurs, if a certain person wins a golf tournament, for instance. Vin just had the right words at the right time in any number of situations over his 67-year career as the voice of the Dodgers. Those are the moments. But Jeff, what you said also, I appreciated, you know, as a baseball nerd with stats, even the great stories he told, he always had time to inject stats at the right time. Whenever there was a guy on third base, do you remember what he used to do? Whenever there was a runner on third base, Dodgers fans will know this. We always look at wild pitch stats when there's a man at third. Never hear announcers doing that. But he always had the right sort of spice of analytics in there. Tim Kirkjian said something great yesterday on SportsCenter. How funny he was. He called Adrian Gonzalez had the speed of a file cabinet. So great. A file cabinet. Everybody has the image of that clunky.
That's fantastic.
Clunky piece of furniture. And something else Kirkjian said, which we can really appreciate doing the show that we do on a daily basis. We have, so for those who don't know, just a little behind the curtains, we have outs for an hour. There's a moment we know the exact to the second when we have to be out four times an hour. So for us, there's never a surprise. And so if Jeff and I are getting into it, for instance, on the show about whatever, we have to be cognizant of when that segment ends so that we can properly time a story or a point we're trying to make, whatever. And that's with hard outs. That's knowing when that line is. Well, Kirkjian said something I think that was phenomenal yesterday, which was, in Vin Scully's career, he said, he has never once had a third out interrupt any of his stories. It was magical. He would get into a story. You would think to yourself, oh, well, I mean, he's going to have to get interrupted by the end of this half inning by, you know, events on the diamond. And it just always seemed to work out for the magic that was Vin Scully. And so Vin Scully, at the age of 94, after 67 years with the Dodgers organization, just unbelievable. There'll never be another like him. May he rest in peace. Jason Weingarten is with us, and we will talk baseball and baseball picks with Jason after the break. But Jason, you texted me. You were in your car yesterday. You are an Angeleno. You have grown up on the Dodgers. This had huge impact on you.
Yeah, you know, I was just finishing up dinner with a couple of my friends who are big Dodgers fans, and got back in the car. I was listening to the game when they announced it live, and it was, I almost drove off the road real quick. I was like, what did they just say that?
And you said you're probably not the only person in LA who almost just crashed their car because
it was such an institution. He meant a lot to everybody, but Dodger fans, baseball fans, everybody who listened to the Dodger game in LA, whether you were a fan or not, you know, Vin Scully was just a part of your life. And, you know, he hasn't been the announcer for the last several seasons, but you still felt that he was the voice of the Dodgers always, you know?
Yeah, it was not lost on me. The Dodgers were playing the Giants sort of apropos last night, and the Dodgers win that. How do you feel now with the trade deadline, if we can somehow artfully or inartfully segue from this? The Dodgers obviously saw their division rival Padres make the biggest moves. Where does that change your calculus, if at all, moving forward this
year? Well, I mean, obviously the middle of the lineup with Tatis, Machado, and Juan Soto now is one of the best, if not the best, in the league. And the idea of Craig Kimbrel facing the middle of that lineup in a meaningful game concerns me if I'm a Dodgers fan, or more importantly, a Dodgers bettor via futures. I think it's a really bad move on the Dodgers' part not getting Soto, because now they either have to win the World Series or spend an entire offseason, you know, facing questions should they have gone the extra mile and got Juan Soto. You know, it's a unwinnable spot for the Dodgers, essentially.
So you really do find it impactful. Like, did it make you want to bet the Padres in any fashion?
No. I mean,
okay. Well, not that much then.
So I had actually started hearing from a reliable source that Soto to the Padres was potentially happening at the All-Star game. That was the first time I heard that kind of, you know, floated. But no, I never really thought about betting the Padres based on the rumor. I still think the Dodgers are the way to go in the National League, but it's never a good thing letting one of your main competitors get the best player in baseball.
Never a good thing. We'll come back after the break. Jason will join us, get his picks for the day in baseball. And besides the Soto move, what was the biggest move or moves at the trade deadline that should move your betting needle? What was truly impactful that may have gotten under the radar? More with Jason Weingarten, again, at Spreadopedia, host of The Wide World of Weingarten. On the other side, Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Back on a Numbers Game, live from the South Point Hotel Casino. Tip of the Strip, Skill Alexander. Jeff Parlay is here as well. Jeff, during the break, jogging in place.
Yes, good old-fashioned middle school exercise, Gil.
He's all bunged up, I believe is the medical term.
We're making it through, man. We're making it through.
You were doing that with a bit more spryness than the file cabinet, that's for sure. Love
that. Such a fantastic line.
So great.
Now I have in my brain a file cabinet attempting to run the bases in my head. That's what makes it so perfect.
The beauty of that is, like, just think of all the things in life where every human being listening to this has the exact same image of something.
Exactly.
Right? The file cabinet is just standard issue. We all know the little handle, the little square that holds, if you want to put in a tag in there. We get tweets.
Perfect.
It's phenomenal. We get tweets at Beating the Book. 3Jack, H3131. Love the college football talk, validating my 5-1 ticket on Iowa to win the Big Ten West. Thank you very much. Thank you to Pete Futak. Stats, Facts, Observations is back. He says, Gil, are you going to have Dr. Bob on, by the way, with his picks on college win totals? He was lights out last year. Yes is the answer. Bob will join us later this month. He always likes to come on late August. He likes to let it marinate, get it all in. Remember, he was 6-0 with us, and I think he was like 11-1 overall, something like that. I might even be shortchanging it. It was that good. Primetime, Cowboys_Cubs1, reacting to my useless talent of being able to name every team that's won a World Series during my lifetime. He goes, my useless talent, being able to name every U.S. president in order in less than 30 seconds. In eighth grade, teacher had a song called Presidential Boogie, and it still sticks in my tiny brain to this day. Can you name all the presidents? I used to be able to when I was a kid.
It would take me a while, but I think I could get there.
21, quick.
No, I don't know numbers. I can name them, but not in order.
Chester A. Arthur.
Very good, Gil.
Ian McDonald points out, I said Carter's home run was 94. Obviously, that was the strike year, or when the World Series get played. It was 93. Thank you for that correction. That is true. And that dude, he says, living on the East Coast, I would stay up late whenever I could for the sole purpose of listening to Vin Scully call Dodgers games. He will likely be one of the last announcers to, quote, let the game breathe, unquote. That is absolutely right. And so much Jeff Parlay will appreciate this, because a young burgeoning announcer like our own Ben Wilson, such a great lesson in that, right? To let the game breathe, not make it about you, the announcer itself. You are just a conduit. Jason Weingarten is with us once again from under a cloud of smoke in Southern Cali, the host of the Wide World of Weingarten podcast. How many episodes a week these days, Jason?
A couple. I don't know. Well, We'll see.
I don't know. Couple. All right. So about my question before the break. So let's take Juan Soto off the table. What's the most, from your betting standpoint, what were the other, what's the most impactful move that happened in the last 24 hours?
I thought overall the moves the Twins made to solidify their bullpen and everything will pay dividends down the stretch, and they'll likely win that division. Not much competition there in the AL Central this year, though. Doesn't seem like anybody's really trying to do much of anything. The Astros, they made some moves around the edges to get, you know, Christian Vasquez, Trey Mancini. I think those moves will also pay dividends for them, you know, come playoff time. But in general, you know, the Padres were the biggest winner. They went out and made all the moves. And other than that, it was kind of a slow deadline. Whit Merrifield, I guess he'll be a nice addition to that Blue Jays lineup, you know, help with the run scoring, I guess.
He's got to get vaccinated.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. And I'm trying to understand the logistics. Even if he was to get vaccinated literally today, can't he not show up in Toronto for 2 weeks? Or
Jeff Parlay has some Canadian vaccine
rules. I read something because Benintendi was the one that, when Benintendi got moved to the Yankees, there was some thought that maybe he would have gone to Toronto first. It depends on which shot. Assuming Merrifield gets vaccinated, I would imagine he will. If he gets Johnson & Johnson, the wait period to play in Toronto is shorter than getting either the two dose.
Wow. That is excellent vaccine knowledge right there.
I also need to get into Canada one of these days, so it's important to know these things.
My girl's from Toronto, right? And so, like, for the last 2 years, her going back and forth was the biggest pain in the butt. Like, it requires so much planning, and, like, you have to do it close to the flight. And so I think it's relaxed now a little bit from Justin Trudeau on down, but it is still with its own set of rules. But he absolutely, if he does not get vaccinated, he cannot play home games, period. That's the issue, obviously, there. So he's going to have to make a decision on that. One would think that he will go ahead and get vaccinated. And obviously, what the Blue Jays are hoping for is not this year's Whit Merrifield necessarily, but previous year's Whit Merrifield. Did you think the Red Sox, I always feel like on this show, and Sporer and I talk about this a lot, I always feel like we forget about the Red Sox. Do you think that their moves are going to be hugely impactful?
Well, I think it's important in a case like this to listen to the stuff coming out of the locker room. And I saw Xander Bogaerts yesterday say, you know, he openly questions the direction the team's going in, and he doesn't understand how they got better trading, you know, their starting catcher and one of the locker room leaders. So doesn't necessarily sound like Xander Bogaerts is having a very fun time in Boston right now. And then they added Eric Hosmer, which is sort of subtraction by addition, you know, like... What are you doing with Eric Hosmer? What advanced metrics? What, you know, 4D chess analysis is this front office analytics group doing that's convincing them that Eric Hosmer, even at, you know, minimum salary, is worth a roster spot? Because I'd, you know, fire him into the sun or throw him into a wood chipper or whatever if I had the opportunity. From a baseball standpoint.
And imagine Eric Hosmer, I say this laughing through my tears, Eric Hosmer was like, DC, no, I'm not going there. I'm not going.
You asked who the winners and losers were yesterday. Yeah. Luke Voit, man, what a bad day he had, waking up, getting Juan Soto as a teammate, and then, hey, can you come here? We gotta talk to you, you know?
I at the beginning of the show, I was talking about, like, if you're a Nationals fan or if you're an Orioles fan, perhaps even more interestingly, right, where it's like, hey, you've never been close to this good for, like, you know, modern history, at least the last, you know, decade, and not the last decade, but close to the last decade. And here you are on the cusp. Okay, well, the right thing to do is here is to ship Mancini and Lopez, because that's how it goes. And I feel like, I get it, right? From a contract standpoint, I get it. But, like, you have a sport. It's called baseball. And in order to increase your fan bases, you have to give fans something to be hopeful about, right? And the Orioles just haven't earned that kind of leeway to behave in that manner. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, and it's one of those things that separates fans from management. And I have very varying opinions on this, because especially the last couple months getting to see, you know, Preston and Crawley and what it takes to run a League Two football team, you know.
Yeah.
I can't imagine the actual day-to-day running a major professional franchise and all the stuff you have to constantly deal with just to field a team, let alone field a successful one. But at the same time, I just don't understand, you know, kind of kicking the can down the road. You know, what are the Orioles going to have a 50-60% playoff chance next year?
Yeah.
Under the best of circumstances?
Yeah, it's like, oh, wait a little longer, guys.
So you're punting a 30% chance for a 60% chance in the future.
Totally.
I think, you know, a lot of this stuff looks good on paper, but the goal is to win.
The goal is to win. Yes.
And you're never guaranteed next season. So it always blows my mind that there's so much patience and so much, we'll get better down the road. And I want to win now. I'm here to win today.
What'd you make of the Giants keeping Rodon at the end?
I guess they didn't get a compelling deal, or they didn't, you know, Farhan didn't see something he liked enough to trade him. But I don't know. I meant to ask you this. Remember last year when the Giants were doing big things and we were getting all those articles about the secret pitching machine and their batting practice?
Yeah.
We're not getting those articles this year.
No, we're not. It's amazing how 107 wins will give you those articles, and otherwise, let's put it, will
not. It's such a, you know, short-term memory, especially from the media.
Yeah.
And they hype things up and hype things up, and then a team doesn't play well, and where did that whole narrative go?
Well, the magic is just, you know, it's marinating right now, Jason. It's, you know, they got to just reconcoct the magic. It's coming. Okay.
Baseball's weird.
Baseball's so weird. That's the main point of all this. Juan Soto, 23-year-old, generational, traded. Ugh, poor DC. All right, last 30 seconds. What do you got today? What have you bet?
So I got three bets so far of varying degrees of confidence. First bet is the Royals currently plus 133. I like this game the most because it looks like it's moved the most and keeps moving, even this morning as limits increase. Baltimore plus 140. I like slightly less because that number stayed pretty high, even with limits going higher this morning. And then Oakland +1.5, -105. I hope Ohtani, you know, does Ohtani things and has 10 strikeouts and hits a home run or whatever, but give me +1.5 at almost even money here, -105. I think it's a good deal.
All right, we'll talk MVP next time you're on. Royals, Orioles, Athletics. Were those the three?
Yep.
Okay.
A's +1.5.
There you go. A's +1.5. Coming back with Brady Cannon next.
The Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, that VSiN College Football Guide is out, and it's out now. Start your football season on the right foot with expert profiles of all 131 teams, including team trends, power ratings, and over-under recommendations, plus our best season win totals bets, Heisman hopefuls, playoff predictions. Is all there. The only way to get access, though, to this year's football betting guide is to become a VSiN All-Access subscriber. Sign up early, and for a discounted $175, you'll receive the college and pro football betting guides, along with full VSiN access all the way through the Super Bowl, or join us for $40 a month and see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all your options and become part of the Sports Betting Network. That's the Sports Betting Network. Skill Alexander, Jeff Parlay is here as well. Brady Cannon, ladies and gentlemen, co-host of the greatest golf betting show there ever was, Long Shots, joins us as well. How you doing, man?
I'm great.
Good to
How
see
are
you.
You.
Good. Congratulations. You were just saying off air that your son is graduating from college.
Yeah, my final trip out of town before football season starts in earnest.
Weren't we just here a second ago talking about you going on a tour with your son?
It seems that way, doesn't it? Yeah, four years goes pretty fast.
And he ended up at Carolina?
Where did he end up? University of Florida.
Florida. But you visited Carolina,
I believe,
at the time. Yep. Yeah.
That was on the tour.
Yeah. Okay, congratulations.
Thank you.
So you're donezo, man. You're out.
I'm done.
Brady Cannon's wrapping it up, everybody. This just did.
No, two kids off the payroll here pretty soon.
Off the payroll. Is that how you view your children, Brady? On the payroll. Well, good. Congratulations to him, and congratulations to you and the wife.
Thank you. Thank you.
We probably should mention this before we get into golf talk, because we talked about Vin Scully, obviously. But we didn't talk about the football news that happened yesterday, and I'm not talking about Deshaun Watson. By the way, just over 24 hours for Roger Goodell and that office to make any kind of appeal on the Deshaun Watson ruling by former federal judge Sue L. Robinson. So 24 hours left to do that. But the other football news yesterday was that the NFL notified the Miami Dolphins. This has no betting implications, but it's worth bringing up that the team would be stripped of its 2023 first round pick next year. So that's kind of huge if they, you know, because that doesn't give them the same flexibility they have next year with first round picks. They would have had two. Now they have one. So they go stripped of its 2023 first round pick, among other disciplinary measures, for violations of league policies relating to the integrity of the game. Following a 6-month investigation, the league found the Dolphins and primarily team owner Stephen Ross and vice chairman limited partner Bruce Beal violated the anti-tampering policy on three occasions from 2019 to 2022. In conversations with quarterback Tom Brady and the agent for then New Orleans Saints head coach Sean Payton. However, the NFL did not find evidence that the team intentionally lost games during the 2019 season. So they were absolved of tanking allegations that head coach Brian Flores had made. Remember, in February, he said in a lawsuit alleging racism in the league's hiring practices that Ross attempted to incentivize him to tank or purposely lose games shortly after he was hired in 2019. With Ross allegedly offering him $100,000 for every loss that season. That's what Flores alleged. GM Chris Greer told him Ross was mad that the on-field success was compromising their draft position. By the way, in addition to the first-round pick, Dolphins also forfeit their 2024 third-round selection. Ross gets fined $1.5 million, suspended through October 17th. Beal gets fined $500,000. Anyway, I mean, that's a pretty brutal thumbing of the nose at rules, like at tampering rules. Now, here's the thing. When this first came out, remember what we were talking about. We weren't as concerned about the tampering. Like, we didn't care about that. We only cared about the tanking.
Well, doesn't it seem like they've punished him according to the tanking, but they're calling it tampering?
Yes. To answer your question, yes.
Because wouldn't it be awful if the NFL admitted that some hanky-panky was going on?
Yeah, now, I totally agree. Like, because and Brian Flores, by the way, it's so funny hearing their, you know, both Ross and Flores commenting afterwards, because Ross is like, well, you see, we're free of all this stuff. And, you know, I don't agree with this punishment, but I'll accept it. And Flores is like, yeah, this is great and everything. But like, it sucks that you guys are acting like I didn't, you know, what I was talking about isn't true, because it was.
I'm not so sure they don't disagree with him.
Correct.
And I would imagine they found some evidence. Yeah.
But to your point, that's the third rail,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And for those of us who bet, that's the stuff that is fascinating to us. Obviously, we did it betting-wise and for the draft and Tankapalooza and basketball, but with football, the notion that we're all so immersed in the NFL in a way that we just are not in anything else, but the notion that your team is being incentivized by an owner to actively tank, I totally believe Brian Flores. Mm-hmm. Totally believe him.
He never came off to me as a dishonest guy.
No. Flores is with the Steelers now, it should be pointed out.
Which is interesting, too. There's some angles there possibly moving forward in betting.
And I guess, the Flores part of it?
Yeah, like, you know, when they're matched up, they don't have a game this particular year, but if they happen to face the Dolphins or other teams that Flores had success against, the Patriots, I mean, Flores was a darn good coach.
He is a great coach. The only reason I want to bring it up is because, you know, when we first started doing Tankapalooza, there were people who were like, oh, really? You think the players? It's never the players, right? It's what's being put out there on the field or on the court or whatever. And I just want to bring up that this is not something that is impossible, right? Like, it's just, you just wonder how, if this is, you know, beyond Stephen Ross or anything. Anyway, he was absolved of that part of it, but gets the tampering violations. But the tampering violations are brutal. Like, he absolutely should get nailed. That franchise should absolutely get nailed for that.
Yeah, but do you think, like, I mean, it seems forms of tampering go on quite often.
Sure.
So would you get fined $1.5 million and the other guy gets $500,000 and they take away a couple of draft picks? Does that, you know, crime really fit the punishment? I don't think so. I think they busted him for the tanking.
Yep, I think you're right.
They just didn't spell it out that way.
I think you're exactly right. Because Lord knows there's a lot of other owners that should get absolutely punished for other things. Daniel Snyder, I'm talking about you. But this one did get punished, and I'm with you. To me, it had to be for the tanking part of it, even though that's not what's being stated.
Tampering would have been a slap on the hand, I would have believed.
You know, do you bet preseason at all?
I used to quite a bit.
Why don't you anymore?
It just seems like the market moves so quickly now if you don't catch it early. And preseason is so much information-based. And, you know, like, I don't know about 5 years ago, but certainly 10 years ago, I think you could find things out and get a good number. And I had very good preseasons. I went undefeated a couple of times. You know, I didn't bet every game, but, you know, maybe went 5 or 6-0, 8-0, something like that. But now I think the information, especially with social media, it becomes disseminated so quickly that the odds makers can move. And I think it's just hard to beat it anymore.
I never, never bet preseason. I understand for those who used to and those there, I acknowledge if some had success doing it, good on them for the reasons you state. It was never anything I wanted to get involved in.
Well, it was just a market where I think you could really gain an edge.
If you could, I'm all about it.
You could find out who was going to try and win the game and who was going through a glorified practice. And now you can find that out, but everybody knows about it so quickly, you lose
even
used to was.
The thing is, even with that, though, the game is too long for my taste to still manifest all the time. Right? It's like even if I had some knowledge of how long the starters are playing for, it's still a four-quarter game, and there's too many random events. But for those who used to do it and for those who still do it, God bless you.
I maybe bet two preseason games last year, and maybe I was 1-1 or something like that. But no, it's not the same.
You don't do a parlay, do you? You don't bet any preseason, do you?
Very, very rarely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, you know, there's still some situations out there. John Harbaugh's really good in preseason. John Gruden used to be a guy that was trying to win every game.
Steve Spurrier used to let out the whole playbook when he was with Washington. Well, we're just going to pitch it and catch it. They went to Osaka and beat the Niners like 41-16. I'm like, oh, great. We're showing everything. This is awesome. Real quick here before the break, because we do want to get into the Wyndham Championship and your thoughts at the Sedgefield Country Club this week at the PGA Tour, the last PGA Tour before the three FedEx Cup tournaments. I always ask you this. FedEx Cup, because it's layered, because it's 130 to 75 to 30. Is that what those are the numbers?
125 to 70 to 30.
I completely botched that. 125,
guys.
No. 125 to 70 to 30. Staggered start when it's 30.
Yeah.
Staggered in terms of where you start the tournament in the scoreboard.
I think that one, the Tour Championship, the final 30 is the least bettable.
The least bettable. So that was my question. So does this, because I'm into anything that requires sort of multi-layered thinking, and I enjoy betting the FedEx Cup, but it's not your thing.
Well, like I say, the Tour Championship is very tough. Maybe I'll try a future or two.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Right,
to win the whole thing.
Yeah, because if you can figure out who will be positioned properly, mm-hmm. right, come Tour Championship in those final 30, and I believe that starts your 10 under first place going into the Tour Championship is 10 under, followed by 8 under, 7 under, 6
right.
under, so on.
And I assume that they're not going to amend that this year. I believe that will be the case once again. Now the prize, oddly enough, has increased $18 million to the FedEx Cup Championship.
What was it before, 10?
Yeah, 10. Used to be 10.
18
And then
million.
I think it may have gone to 15 last year, now 18.
I just want to make this point again. That is the one thing where Live Golf has, like, does need to be given credit for. They have pushed the PGA to do stuff.
I think it's kind of shifted. It's almost better to be a PGA Tour guy now because, like you say, competition has created dollars.
Coming back, more Brady Cannon next.
The Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets and risk-free tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas? Well, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM rewards, sports betting's premier loyalty program featuring exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager on the BetMGM app. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. We get tweets at Beating the Book. This is from Nick Shea. Hosmer is an upgrade. Talking about what Jason Weingarten was saying about Eric Hosmer, he says Hosmer is an upgrade over any other option the Sox had at first base, a position at which the Red Sox lead the league in errors this season. He's also a decidedly better offensive option than Dolbeck is. By the way, Nick, I said to Jeff Parlay off air, I can totally see a moment in the postseason if the Red Sox get there where Hosmer has the key sequence of any game. Totally can see that.
It's pretty sad state of affairs for Red Sox first baseman that Hosmer is even potentially looked as an upgrade.
Trevor Warwick, traveling in and out of Canada, still a disaster. I would rather have the kidney stone over traveling through Pearson.
No, you wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't, Trevor. I understand your point.
Apropos. Yes. Yeah.
Jeff Parlay coming back from kidney stones.
I know.
Poor guy. Although he hasn't produced the stone, so we're a little skeptical.
Ooh. Yeah.
Let me see the stone, Jeff. Brady Cannon is here to talk some golf with us. Wyndham Championship this week, Sedgefield Country Club. How would you describe this field?
I think it's an underrated event, man. Andy Molitor that does the deep dive.
Deep dive.
Yeah, he was our guest on Long Shots this week. You can check that out at vsin.com/podcast. And he and I both agreed that he loves this event, he said, because so much is on the line. You got to finish in the top 125 to keep your tour card, to make the FedEx Cup playoffs. I think it's a predictable tournament as far as course history. Guys that play well here typically play well here year after year. Webb Simpson, Siwoo Kim, Kevin Kisner. You know, it's kind of that shorter knockers golf course.
Shorter knockers.
But I think it's a fun tournament with, you know, with the end of the season looming and the urgency and whatnot. So I landed on some of the shorter shots. I don't think, like, the last couple of weeks, the Rocket Mortgage and the 3M Open in Minnesota, I think you certainly could take a shot with some guys deeper down the board. Now, it ended up being Tony Finau, who was a very short shot. But this one, I think...
Good for him, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
But this one, I have a feeling, is probably going to land on somebody more in the... I'd go maybe 40-1 at the most. I think it's going to be 40-1 or less. And we've had a lot of short shots winning golf tournaments as of late. I think that trend will continue. My shortest shot is Shane Lowry at +1650. You know, he started out the season on such a roll and he's cooled off a little bit, but my numbers just have him, you know, really spot on as the top of my board for what skill sets are required this week. So I went with the Irishman. I think you could argue he's the very best player in the field. Then we get more into the course specialist, Russell Henley. I was on him last year, Gil. He led for 63 holes. He led going into the back nine on Sunday. Unfortunately, it unraveled after that. But I
remember Matt and Kelly dying on that hill, too.
Oh, that was tough. Yeah. It was one of those where I had like four guys in the top 10 and none of them came through. He was very good last week at the Rocket Mortgage, and now he gets his preferred putting surface of Bermuda grass at the Wyndham. So I like Russell Henley. He's got a great history there and on Donald Ross courses as well. I did take a shot with Siwoo Kim at 28-1. This guy, his last five trips to the Wyndham, has finished 5th, 3rd, 2nd, and 1st. He's one of those guys that is just remarkable at this particular course. There's a correlation also with TPC Sawgrass. If you look at the last 11 winners of the Wyndham Championship, five of them have also won the Players' Championship. Also a strong correlation with Harbortown, but Siwoo Kim, a former Players' Champion. Brian Harman at 36-1. Our guest Andy Molitor is also on Harman at 36-1. He's got tremendous form on the correlated courses. Great short game, great putter. And interesting, Brian Harman just finished 6th at the British Open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this guy certainly in good form as well. Christian Bezuidenhout, I know you like him.
Bezuidenhout.
55-1. And he feels to me, Gil, yeah. First of all, he's shown that he can compete in a birdie fest. He finished 2nd at the John Deere Classic. He really checks all the boxes as far as the skill set, maybe the very best putter in the field. But he feels like one of those guys like Will Zalatoris, Davis Riley, Cameron Young, that's about to win any day now.
Cameron Young feels like he is on the cusp every time out.
It's like he finishes 2nd every week.
Yeah.
But Bezuidenhout, I think, is a good play this week.
I am totally beating myself up that I didn't take Cam Young in my one and done with Kelly and Matt for primetime last week. I instead went Max Homa, who had a very ho-hum, like top 30-ish kind of finish.
I had him in a matchup over Adam Scott that cashed, so yeah. He did just well enough.
Just well enough. Okay. Any head-to-heads here?
Yeah, I also played two long bombs. And again, I came out and said I think it's probably going to be a shorter shot. But I think these prices are probably a little too big on these guys. I don't know if they'll win. Maybe a better top 20 bet on Joel Damon at 120-1 and Lucas Glover at 180-1. You know, the skill sets match up, but again, they are long bombs. Head-to-head matchups, Siwoo Kim over Ju Young Kim. Siwoo at about minus 120, minus 125. And Ju Young Kim is another guy that is really making a lot of noise as of late. Just finished seventh last week. He is a very good player, but I like Siwoo as the course specialist here. Tyrrell Hatton, minus 110 over Adam Scott. I've seen that price get to about minus 130. I'm okay with it in the minus 125 range if you can find it. Kevin Kisner at even money over Adam Scott, and Kisner's now gone to the favorite in that matchup as well. Again, I'm okay with it till about minus 120, minus 125.
No Davis Riley, no Varner, none of those names.
I almost landed on Varner.
I was good. I'm just scrolling down.
I wouldn't be surprised by a show from Harold Varner this week.
Well, that's the sentence, right? I wouldn't be surprised by a show. Which is, until you see him win, you can't go that far.
Yeah, yeah. I had all my plays, and I was trying to find one more. I felt like I just needed one more really good candidate to win, and that's when I added Siwoo Kim. But Varner was a guy I was heavily considering. Almost pushed the button on HV3.
Have you done any NFL preseason stuff?
Yeah. Just talking with our buddy Las Vegas Chris, mm-hmm. who I'm going to lunch with a little later today.
Nice.
I did a two-team six-point teaser, and I was asking him what he thought about the Raiders and the Chargers. I teased the Raiders up to plus 10.
Are we talking about week one now?
What
are
week
we
one.
Yeah, week one of the NFL.
Week one.
Week one regular
Chargers
season.
Are at home laying 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
I think that crowd will probably favor the Raiders rather than the Chargers. It's at least a 50-50 split. You know those teams for the last handful of games, they've all come down to the wire. It was nearly a tie, it should have been a tie in the very last game last year. And one thing that I really like about this matchup is Josh McDaniels comes over from the Patriots, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And the last three or four times the Patriots have played the Chargers, they have owned them. So I think there's a little bit of an edge there for McDaniels in knowing how to game plan against this team.
What's your, by the way, Brady Cannon, oh, by the way, won a super contest back in the day. Want to give you your street cred for those who are just landing. 2011. I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to say the year, Brady.
No, that's okay.
Won the super
year.
Contest with Sans Souci, his team, three others. There was a fifth guy who decided, there was a team of four the year before, and one guy was like, yeah, I don't want to do it next year. You can end up winning without him. So is there we only have a couple minutes, less than a couple minutes. What's the team that you are more bullish on than the market? What's the team that you are more bearish on than the general market?
Well, I like the Ravens, and I don't think I'm alone there. I did bet the Ravens to win the division at plus 190. And maybe it takes a little value away from that with Deshaun Watson only getting six games, but who knows? He may get another six games here pretty quick.
Yeah, I have my doubts about that, but we'll see. The Ravens to win the division, just anecdotally, let's see if Parlay agrees with this, seems like the most popular bet of the offseason.
Well, remember, when it came out, the number was very high.
Yeah.
Better than 2-1. It was maybe plus 225
or
so.
I think plus 230, plus 225 was the best you could do.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the reason that we've seen a lot of people bet that. I don't think we're seeing people bet it now at plus 160, though.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, and I jumped on it at plus 190. I was happy with that.
What's your more bearish than the market pick?
Gosh, I don't know. Maybe the Buffalo Bills.
Really? Wow.
You know, they played a really easy schedule last year, and they play a much more difficult schedule this year. Now, I love that team. I'm just saying maybe people are higher on them than I. Let's not just start making Super Bowl hats for everybody just yet.
Well, we had Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders on yesterday. He'll join us tomorrow to talk AFC as well. But he was saying their simulations, Bills had the most in terms of just over 10% chance to win the Super Bowl in all their simulations, but that's the lowest of any team ever
there
in terms
go.
Of being the number one shot to win the Super Bowl in their projections. Thank you, Brady. Appreciate
you
it. Brady Cannon, congratulations to your son again. Lombardi Line is next. Ben Wilson in the house. The sports betting leader.